Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. What's going on, Chief?
This team just can't stop winning. That's the problem. That's what's going on. We're tanking the tank. You're tanking the tank.
So yeah, it's, you know, I thought I'd gotten over this conflicted feeling of, you know, when early on in the season when they got off to that 4-2 start and we were, you know.
This has been a reality check where it's like, you guys need to chill with all the winning.
They've won 5 of 6, and they have now gone from last place to the third worst record.
Yep.
Which puts them in danger because you can only drop 2 spots. If you're in the third spot, you could end up being fifth, and then you're out of the Bedard, Fantilli, Carlson sweepstakes.
Yeah, so it has like real world repercussions here. Now, a sell off is coming. They have, right. I think they only have 5 home games between now and the deadline. So you would think that as they face some tougher competition and go through kind of this is the dog days part of the season, that they will kind of revert back to normal, but they are doing some things, and I think they're getting a little healthier and just playing a little bit better, where it's like, I don't know if you guys are going to be bad enough.
Right. Yeah. I think this is a little market correction because we went like 2 months where they had 3 wins.
Yeah. Like that's
so like, and they were finding ways to lose
right
every night, and they couldn't
score. Guys were hurt.
Yeah. Yep. And now, you know, Stalock is uncertain with his back in concussion protocol.
Yep.
I do think when they make some moves, and we're going to get into that because we have Frank Cervelli joining us, NHL
Big time insider.
Yeah.
Big time. He's right there, I think, on the Mount Rushmore now of insiders.
I don't
for NHL
disagree.
Insiders.
Yeah. Especially stateside. I think he's might be number one.
Yeah, I think you can make that argument. Yeah, big time insider. Yeah.
So we'll get the latest on what he's hearing about Kane and Taves and any other Blackhawks. And, you know, how many of these NHL teams are hampered by the salary cap and might be paralyzed to not be able to do what they would like to do. So we'll get into that with him. But you bring up a good point. Like, they're playing better. I mean, they're getting production from the back end, which is such a novel idea. The rest of the league, you look at good teams in the National Hockey League, and you'll look, they'll have one or if not 2 defensemen that are well over point per game guys.
Now, it's becoming like very commonplace.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
And it's you're just like, really? Oh, yeah, okay. And then you look at the Hawks, and it's like, you know, we didn't have a power play goal by a defenseman last year. And that's like almost unheard of.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Like you would think that you just throw one on net, it would find its way in, but it is crazy. But I mean, the guy you're talking about is Seth Jones.
Yeah.
Like Seth Jones, and the key to the Blackhawks lottery ball situation is that Seth Jones needs to turn into the player that all the fans think he is. Okay. So he needs to be worse. He's playing 25 minutes a night, playing well. He had the you know, the big game against Buffalo. He had 3 points. He had the game tying goal late. He had the OT goal, and he's moved the puck. He's playing good defense. He and Jake McCabe are making a nice pairing. I would say that if you're going to look and point to one guy or one thing, that Blackhawks top pairing of Jones and McCabe is the way they're playing is a very good top pairing. So they're able to kind of limit the other team's chances to a degree, create some things on the rush. And I think that if you look at this, it's almost like the Hawks go as Seth Jones goes. Because when they were playing better at the beginning of the year, Jones was off to a pretty good start. Jones gets hurt. They go in the tank. He's nursing that thumb injury. Probably wasn't feeling great, getting back in the swing of things. And now it feels like maybe the last 3 weeks, maybe a month, he's been playing much, much better, and so has the team. So if he can just go back to being the guy that that everyone thinks he is, that would be pretty good.
Have you noticed the quicker release, the quick snapshot, that rather than his half slapper mm-hmm. that he had been using quite a bit like last year, and
yep.
he's getting rid of the puck quicker, and it's not giving bodies in front of him time to take away shooting lanes. Mm-hmm. The goalie's getting less time to set up.
It's the old Ray Bork. The old Ray Bork. Just find a way to get it through. Bork was like the master of that, and he would say, you want it 6 to 12 inches off the ice, and that's just gonna just find a lane and get it through, and the screens and tips and deflections and all that. We'll end up creating chaos and chances, and it does seem like I hadn't really thought of it until you just mentioned it, but now I'm like visualizing, like, yeah, like he is seeming like getting the puck to the net a little bit quicker, and it's been productive. So, and you can even see it, like, if you're charting his shots on goal, those have been up lately too. So,
and look, one thing is saying it, another thing is doing it. I think it's something that Luke has really stressed, mm-hmm. and we talked about this, I don't know, probably at the beginning of the season, or even when you were on at times last year. Under Joel Quenneville, blue liners, defensemen, were not allowed to take wristers or snapshots. They had to have slap shots every time. Mm-hmm. And the thought there was no one's going to get in front of a slap shot intentionally. But the technology's gotten so good that these guys don't feel it like they used to. And the sticks are better than they used to. So that snapshot can still come in at 70 miles an hour. Or what have you. And the point is, you're saving yourself that half second to maybe second, and that's more valuable than 10 extra miles per hour.
Yeah, because realistically, you're from 60 feet, no one's beating a goalie in the NHL.
Right.
Like, almost nobody. Maybe Chara, okay, but back in the day. But really, no one without it. If it's a clear shot, every goalie in the NHL should be able to stop a slap shot from 60 feet. So yeah, it's more about getting that quick release. Don't let them get set up. Get tip screens, all that kind of stuff going towards the net, and you're going to be more productive from the back end. And it's having results. So, and you're right. Like, the sticks today are absurd.
Right.
They're absurd. The amount of torque that they can get, the low kick that they can get. They can get shots off from any angle. The technology on the sticks is much better. And yeah, it is probably about a 10 to 15 mile per hour at that level reduction, where Seabrook, he's just going to hammer it. It'll go 88, 92, depending on what it is. And if you want to get in front of that, that's your business. But a lot of guys didn't. And now things have really kind of shifted, and this is paying dividends for the Hawks.
So the defense has been contributing offensively. And, like the other night in Philadelphia, it looked like they were playing a faster game, mm-hmm. a north-south game, close to four lines, I would say. Mm-hmm. And like that Kershev Taves Radish line has been the most noticeable of the group.
Yep.
And I think Kershev has all the skill, all the tools. I just question, Chief, why I don't see it on a regular basis.
Yeah, it was weird that he kind of came to the NHL his first year, which was the COVID year, and was highly productive. And then I think you saw a lot of guys who had success, we'll say, in a rookie year in that environment, now can't come back down to earth, where the travel is a thing, the full barns is a thing, and the night-in, night-out grind was really impacting some of these young players. And I think that Kershev fell into that. It's almost like he had to learn how to be a pro and learn how to be an NHLer all over again,
right.
And like a real NHLer this time. And so I think there's some of that is still ironing out. I think he's also still kind of trying to find out what his role is in the league and in the team. Is he going to be a guy who drives possession and offense? He certainly seems to have the skill and the skating for that. But other times it's like you'll like him on what he does defensively too. Like, I think he's a pretty well-rounded player, and I'm sure there's just like the ability to focus or maybe even not focus on these specific elements of your game. Like, I'm going to be great defensively tonight, and does that take away from his offense? But I think he's that line, if you're looking at guys for the future, obviously that's been like the Hawks, like, quote unquote top line, or certainly second line. But if Radish and Kershev are part of your third line, I think you can do a lot worse than that if you're trying to be competitive as those two guys both grow.
So Jonathan Toews continues to have his resurgence season, I'll say. You know, it's far from being where he was pre-COVID, where, you know, he was
right about a point a game.
Right around. I think he was going to – he was on pace for 70 points that year when it was halted at 60 games or whatever. So this past week, we talked to Patrick Kane last week and talked to Jonathan Toews this week. Charlie Meliotis for the Blackhawks Talk podcast sat down with him and, you know, got into the hockey future and all sorts of things like that. And the first cut we have from Toews, you know, he said last year he wanted to continue playing, but play at a high level. So Charlie asked Toews if he feels he's closer to that level this season compared to last season.
Yeah, it's closer. when wasn't hard to move past that. And I think, you know, yeah, I definitely still have that feeling that it's not too much to ask out of myself to get back to that level again. And with what I know, what I've learned about myself and the game and how to take care of my body, how to prepare and how to play the game. Obviously, the game is a lot faster and it's improved, I would say, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of things for me have gotten better. It's just getting to a place where my body cooperates and things kind of fall into place. And so still working towards that at this point.
Chief, what have you thought of Toews' play for the bulk of this season?
You know, he's clearly not the player he was. And it's just like little things. Like it doesn't seem like he says all the right things or a lot of the right things, but I don't see the production matching some of what his words are around the team. Is he committed to being the best player that he could possibly be? It doesn't necessarily, like, you know how it used to be, but you don't hear the same stories like you used to. So I don't know anything for sure. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like he's maybe as engaged, and maybe it's difficult to be what he was. And he talked about it in that interview that Charlie did where it's like, I took my role of being a captain very serious. And it's almost like Toews and Kane have kind of, like, flipped. You know, like, now Kane is, like, the most dedicated, diet, doesn't go out. You know, and I don't know what Toews' social life is. I'm not making a comment on that. But it just seems like their kind of roles in leadership and how they function within the team dynamic, it has kind of switched from what it was, you know, in 2010, 11, 12, where Kane seems to be like the de facto, like everyone looks to him. He's the mentor kind of guy. And Toews is a veteran, a respected guy, but maybe not the guy who's like driving the culture of the team anymore.
Coming up, more from the captain, Jonathan Toews. What does he expect his conversation to be like with Kyle Davidson? Does he think that his decision of staying in Chicago or asking to be traded is going to be influenced by what Kane has to say? You're going to want to hear that. You can hear the conflicted thoughts in his mind as we approach that March 3rd trade deadline. It is the Hockey Show. We're sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves are in the midst of a season-long six-game road trip. They've been bolstered by the return of goaltender Peter Kochetkov. He has been reassigned to the Wolves. He was re-signed this past week by the Carolina Hurricanes, where he went 13-4-5 with three shutouts before being sent back to Chicago. He's the future Hurricanes
goaltender.
That's the guy. He's impressive. So the Wolves continue their road trip tonight in Rockford. More from the captain, Jonathan Toews. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief
on the AM at 1000, on the FM at 100.3 HD2, on your phone through the ESPN Chicago app.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Show on ESPN 1000. Blackhawks in St. Louis tonight. 6:30 pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Last week we heard from Patrick Kane on this show about his hockey future. Today we're delving into the captain, Jonathan Toews. And, you know, that March 3rd trade deadline is fast approaching. The Pat Brisson represents both Kane and Toews. They talked briefly before the Christmas holiday. They're thought to reconvene here towards the end of January and right around that break that the Hawks have, kind of like a natural break around the All-Star game. Here's what Jonathan Toews expects the conversation will be like between his camp and Kyle Davidson.
You know, Kyle's been nothing but respectful in this entire time. And, you know, guy in my position, I understand he has a job to do. And, you know, he's really investing in the future of this franchise, and rightfully so in a lot of respects. And so for myself, you know, it's just kind of a tricky situation. Last year, my contract, and haven't played my best hockey in some time, and you know, so I'm not sure what the opportunities are or what's going to come knocking. But there's no doubt in my mind, I'm again focusing on my game, trying to improve that every single day, and trying to enjoy just playing the game, being a Blackhawk, you know, as long as I can for however long that is and while it still lasts.
What did you take from we're going to hear the last soundbite, which is the one that I think really kind of shows you the conflicted area that he's in and kind of maybe how he oscillates from day to day, whether it's I'm going to stay or I'm going to go.
Well, and you hear that often. And I wonder if some of that is based upon the feedback that he's hearing or getting or lack thereof internally, where it's like, hey, like I might be willing to stay, but like give me a little something that says that you want me here.
Right.
And I think there is probably some of that. And I should say that, like, I love Jonathan Toews. I hope he does find a way to re-sign, obviously not at 10.5. But if you're looking for pieces of a competitive team, you can do a lot worse than a second or third line center who is on pace for right now for 52 points. Like, do you talk about the guys like Philip Deneau's, you know, been a guy like that. People lament the fact that he's gone. And so if you can get, you know, get back to what Toews was in that COVID shortened season where they had the playoff bubble. He was actually very good in that playoff bubble too. He's right about a point per game guy there.
The memory ran out of steam towards the end.
Yeah, but he had like the long COVID supposedly that was one of the factors. So, but he played, and that was such a weird thing, but he was very good against Edmonton. He was competitive against Vegas. Obviously, he's not a number one two-way center anymore, but he can be an important piece of a competitive team. And I hope that, you know, they work something out where it makes sense. But I don't blame him for wanting, after all this, it's been a long 8 years. And he kind of referenced that in that interview at one point as well, where it's like, it's, you know, it's been a while since I've been at my best. It's been a long time since the team's been at its best. And it's true. So if he's looking around, it's like, man, like, I don't know who, you know, theoretically we'll talk to Saravelli about who would be a potential destination for him. But like, get him to the playoffs. Like, that's a guy who, you know, I'm sure he wants to reignite that fire where he's battling, you know, where every face-off matters, every board battle matters.
He leads the league in face-off wins.
He's awesome at it. Yeah. And but it's like you win it and then it's like, well, now I have to go get it back
again.
Right. And so I would love to see him in a situation where he's playing with guys who make him better. And it's been a while since they've been in that situation he's been in that situation.
So obviously Toews and Kane have been tied at the hip since day one here in Chicago. So the question was posed to Toews by Charlie Romeliotis. Will Toews' decision be influenced by what Kane wants to do?
I mean, I think we're both in very unique situations, and again, I can't speak to his personal wants and wishes and maybe what his family would want for him, and you know, only he can answer that at this point, and whether he's willing to do that in front of the camera or not is another thing. But I mean, for myself, again, it's still a difficult question to answer, because there's part of myself that still doesn't really want to admit the situation, and also wants to continue being a Blackhawk and finish my career here. And at the same time, you know, there's part of me that sees the writing on the wall and sees that this team, this organization, is trying to hit the reset button, and that maybe change for everybody is not such a bad thing, and that goes for myself as well.
Man, you really hear that there, that there's some days where he doesn't really want to admit that he's in the situation that he's not going to be a Blackhawk for life. And then there's other days where he's like, I get it. They're hitting the reset button. And maybe it's a change of scenery for everybody is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was like, does Kane's decision impact yours? I think the short answer, based on what he said there, is no.
Right.
Okay, that's kind of like reading me, and who knows, but reading between the lines, that's the vibe I got from that answer. And, yeah, it is, like, I'm sure, like, you know, that sweater, that crest, that letter on his chest, like, that means something to him, and it should, and something you should be proud of. And Ken, it's like, that's the age-old thing. Like, they've already hit the reset button. That's clear.
Right.
That was clear with the DeBrinket, Doc, that whole thing last summer.
Hagel.
That's all that stuff's gone. So it's like, what does this reset end up looking like? And so much of it, I think, it's hinged and tied to Bedard. Because if they win the lottery, well, now it's like, okay, like, you accelerate, you get like a legitimate top six franchise. That's your reset button. And then everybody else is built around that. And can the old guard of Taze and Kane be a part of that equation? And do the Hawks want them to be?
Well, that's the question. That's the question. And I think Patrick Kane, if he was clairvoyant and could, know that they're going to get the number one pick and they're going to take Bedard, I think he would sign an extension here. I really do. I think he thinks that highly of Connor and would love to play with him. And I think pretty much every player in the league would like to play with him.
I like that you're already first name Connor.
Connor.
That's what you're like. He's one of ours. He's Connor. He's Connor. That nice boy Connor is going to come in here and fix everything. And, yeah, I think that it's also like, can you have an understanding and be like, you know, go to Dallas for a little bit. We're going to get a couple guys and a picks back. We'll send you on a nice 2-month vacation. We'll put you up in the W hotel or wherever.
Right.
We'll take care of your family, whatever you need. And you just come back in June. Okay. Just come back or July 1, whatever the free agency things we have. You can play with Bedard. You finish your career here. We'll pretend that 2 months never happened. I know I will. I will pretend that
you will never see Patrick in green.
You know who never played for the Dallas Stars? Patrick Sharp.
He was never there.
He just had a little hiatus. He came right back.
Did Duncan ever play for the Edmonton Oilers?
Not that I saw. Not that I recall. So he just popped up for like a Hossa's retirement ceremony. I don't know what happened to him the previous
year.
Yeah, I missed you, buddy. But I don't know where he was. And that's, you just block it out. And that actually, I think, is a real thing. No one talks about Bobby Orr with the Blackhawks.
No.
He's a Bruin. Okay. And that is how it should be here. And I, like, if he has to go away for a little bit, or even if he wants to, I think if you have Connor Bedard, and who knows if they're going to, you know, splash the pot in free agency or you know, be aggressive with, you know, taking on some.
Well, not right away, right? I mean, yeah, I could not see them, the rebuild, getting into free agency next year. I'm talking the Matthews year.
Mm-hmm.
That
totally.
That's the year I think they might spend.
And that's, but
if they have Bedard.
If they have Bedard, and it's like, if those guys even become available, because if you look out into the future, sure, there's a year in the future where it's like Draisaitl is a theoretical free agent and Matthews is a theoretical free agent, but those guys are also at that point going to be 29. And is it better to go after a guy who's 20, going to be 26 right now? And it's like, hey, like, we know we're at the front of this. You're going to have to, it's all timing. And it's like, what is your ultimate goal? It's like, sometimes it's like one in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of thing. It's like, let's just get we know a guy's going to be here for 6 years and be competitive. Let's get him now and worry about, because I can't imagine that they're going to be trying to get the number one pick again next year, especially if they get Bedard or Fantilli. They're just going to play. And so at that point, it's just like, if you have Bedard, just start. If you win the lottery, I think you got to start thinking, speeding this process up.
I definitely agree with that. Elliot Friedman reported that teams around the league believe it's going to take a second or a third round pick to land Taves.
Yeah. I think that's probably where I would peg it, because the contract is so big, and the only way that you can get the number down is if you get a third team involved to eat some of that. So then it's like you're spreading it around. So it'd be interesting to see if there is a place where he can land. But I would probably do a second round pick for Taves without, you know, I don't think anybody around town has these dreams of a first round pick as compensation.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because Sportsnet, Jason Bukala wrote an article that and had several trade proposals for Taves and had coming back to the Blackhawks a first round pick. And I thought that was,
we'll see what the market, I mean, every year is different. And I guess if you're a team, maybe you are a team like a Colorado who, you know, you lost Kadri and you need like that bona fide number two type center, and you know your window is right now and the future is, you know, we'll worry about the future tomorrow. Maybe you just bite the bullet and do it, but I think that's a steep price for him.
We'll find out what the trade market is like for a Patrick Kane or a Jonathan Toews. Hockey insider extraordinaire Frank Saravalli joins us next on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle. Blackhawks 1-5 of 6. They're in St. Louis tonight. 7 o'clock faceoff, 6:30 pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago. It's our pleasure to welcome in hockey insider and president of hockey content for the Daily Faceoff, Frank Saravalli. How you doing today, Frank?
I'm good, boys. How are you doing?
We're doing all right. We're trying to figure out what's going to happen here with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews with the trade deadline getting closer and closer. Do you think both of those players will eventually waive their no-movement clause and be dealt?
You know, if I had to flip a coin, I think you're looking at kind of exactly that. It's a coin flip, I believe, and that's not me being Pollyannish. Honestly, I think, one, at this moment in time, Jonathan Toews, the captain, is probably, I think, a little bit more ready just in the people that I talk to. And I think Patrick Kane is really, he's trying to figure it out. He's trying to come to grips with the end of what's been an incredible career in Chicago. It seems like that's on the other end of this. And he's so firmly rooted in Chicago. His family lives there now. His dad is such a big presence at practices and morning skates and even road games that every part of his being is rooted in that town. And there's so many special things that have happened, but, you know, all good things at some point come to an end. And so I think he's sort of grappling with the idea of, well, if I'm moving on, where's that going to be, and do I want to do it right now, or do I want a clean start at the beginning of next season?
Yeah, and you said that, you know, Toews might be more ready to move on. Are teams ready to line up for him?
I think there's a market, to be sure. I don't think the return is probably as sexy as the Blackhawks might want it to be. But I think, In all honesty, the Blackhawks have approached this trade deadline with no real expectations in terms of what a return might be for either player, in the sense that because those two players hold these full no trade clauses, they were thinking, like, if, you know, whatever we end up getting for these guys, it's gravy, because we still have other pieces that we can move to increase our draft capital. You know, the obvious ones in Domi and Athanasiou, and, you know, maybe a Sam Lafferty. I added and really pumped up Jake McCabe on my trade targets board today. I think there's been significant interest there, and we can talk about that in a second. But just wrapping up these two guys, like, there is a market. Like, I think really what teams are wondering is, the player that we've seen in Jonathan Toews to this point this season, there had been sort of flashes of the old Jonathan Toews. And if you're able to get him out of Chicago and put him on a true contending team in the right spot, do you get a shot in the arm? And is he able to turn back the clock for 12 weeks or whatever it might be? And so that's what teams are asking themselves right now.
We've got Frank Saravalli on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. He's hockey insider and president of hockey content for the Daily Faceoff. You can follow him at Frank_Saravalli. you know, Kane missed a few games a week or so ago, and they admitted that it's partly due to that nagging injury he's been dealing with the last couple of years. How do you think that might affect the trade market for Kane?
I don't think it's going to have any impact, at least in the sense that I've gotten from talking to people close to the team. They think that this is something that'll take care of itself and shouldn't have any lingering effects that go beyond, you know, whatever time period we're in now or the next couple weeks. And so by the time March 3rd rolls around, whenever the Blackhawks really begin to engage and have these conversations with Kane and Taves' agent and Pat Brisson from CAA Sports, that they will, you know, it should be cleared up by then. And so teams to this point in the conversations I've had have not expressed any real concern.
Do you think there's a chance that this happens, this could be any trade with the Blackhawks, happens more quickly than waiting until March 2nd? Have you heard chatter about things heating up about a particular guy?
I don't think there's anything front burner for the Blackhawks right now. And just having followed up in the last few days here, the guy that's actually generated the most interest from the Blackhawks and might be closest to front burner would be Jake McCabe. Teams are looking for cost certainty. Teams are looking for term. They like what McCabe brings from a pure defending standpoint. And I think where it starts to get really interesting from McCabe is he's signed up for the next two seasons at $4 million. But what if the Blackhawks were able to leverage their cap space that they have and retain half on McCabe to pry an even better asset out of the team that's interested in trading for him? And the teams that I reported today were Edmonton, Los Angeles, and Toronto. He has a 7-team no-trade list that you'd be able to get much more. And Jake McCabe at $2 million for the next 2 years all of a sudden becomes a really interesting piece.
Yeah, I think I heard McCabe at Edmonton is on that no trade.
Yeah, he hates Canada.
Correct.
Canada's
so the,
nice.
The six Canadian teams outside of Toronto. Toronto's the one exception.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are part of the seven team no trade list is what I heard.
So as we get closer to this deadline, we obviously know Kane and Taves have their situation. There's interest in Jake McCabe. I know Ottawa apparently kicked the tires on Seth Jones. Would the Hawks listen to that, or are they set that Seth Jones is a part of this rebuild?
I don't think they have any appetite for trading Seth Jones. My understanding is the message that Kyle Davidson has given to other general managers is Seth Jones is a no. All of our prospects are a no. Kane and Taves, we'll see. And everyone else is open for business. So that's my understanding and belief. I think they like Seth, and obviously they're not going to pay or retain to keep any salary. He's probably, you know, especially with the cap increasing, that contract is going to look a little bit better. And let's face it, like, you need someone to be part of your team moving forward. Like, you know, you've got to fill out a roster. You need to try and remain a little bit competitive as you begin to shuffle prospects into the lineup. They need support. And someone's going to have to be here on the other end of this to help shepherd the team forward, and I think they're really comfortable with that person being Seth Jones.
I think last year a lot of people were surprised by the return the Hawks got for Brandon Hagel, you know, the two first and two NHL players. Is there a guy on the roster now that could command a return similar to that?
I don't think so. I'm not even sure. I don't think Patrick Kane is in that territory. There's a lot of hoops to go through in terms of getting something like that back with, you know, his salary, one that high, $10.5 million has never been traded before. There's only one 8-figure player that's ever been traded, and that's Jack Eichel. It's not like there's someone with an absolute bargain of a contract. I think one guy that has generated some interest, but not on a deal of anywhere close to that magnitude, is Sam Lafferty. I think the teams that have called, they watch his speed. They see the contract, they see the work that he's done shorthanded, and they say, oh, that would be a nice skill set to add to our team. But even then with Sam Lafferty, you know, he's not killing it in offense. You're probably talking about, in a good scenario, a third-round pick. And other than that, like, I'm not even sure that you're going to entice the Blackhawks to move him because he's another guy you can just keep. Hmm.
Frank Saravalli joins us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. He's locked into the Blackhawks, broke a lot of stories in the past couple of years with the team. You know, we sat down with Kane and Taves in the last week, and everything you said sounds kind of like what you took away from the conversation is they're kind of sorting through it themselves. Some days they have themselves in another city. Others, that they can't imagine leaving the place that they've only known in the National Hockey League. But I think they also want to hear some love from the Blackhawks as well. And do you see either Kane or Taves? Is there any possibility that either one of them or both could get some sort of an extension with this team?
I think that's really where the rubber is going to meet the road in terms of the conversation that's about to unfold. Like, are the Blackhawks willing to entertain that? And the answer to that, I don't know it, but the answer to that, I think, will probably help determine their answer as to what their willingness is to go or stay. And in some ways, it also might impact how flexible they are with their request to increase potentially the return ultimately for the team. And by that, I mean, think back to the situation that unfolded with Claude Giroux and the Flyers last year. The Giroux camp also, he had the same agent, Pat Brisson from CAA Sports, same contract terms in the sense of no trade, no move, and held all the keys. And in the end, the Flyers said to him, look, we've loved your time here. It's been amazing, 1,000 games on the dot. You're an impact player and someone that's going to be remembered fondly by this team. But with where we're heading and where you're heading, we're not re-signing you, and this is it. You can stay if you'd like to. We'd be happy to have you finish out your contract and walk in the summer, or you can decide to go somewhere else. Let us know. And he came back, and I think there were some hurt feelings there in the sense that he would have wanted to negotiate and stay even at a much lower number, and decided in the end, I'm only going to give you one team that I'm willing to go to, and that's the Florida Panthers. And a lot of people were critical of Flyers general manager Chuck Fletcher at the time, saying, well, you didn't get enough in return for Claude Giroux. And I look at that, a first round pick equivalent in Owen Tippett and the other ancillary pick, I think it was a third round pick that came with it. That actually, all things considered, knowing that you can't talk to anyone else and the Florida Panthers knew it, it actually ended up working out okay. So that's why I think the Blackhawks have been really cautious to go into this, not with any expectations as to what they're going to be able to cash in on, because they don't even know if they're going to be able to. And they're going to have to let, whether they like it or not, Kane and Taves drive the bus. And I think, you know, that conversation will be the most telling part of it.
Are they winning too much? Should they start just offloading guys now? Because that's the ultimate goal. You want to get Bedard, and they're playing too well right now to get Bedard. So can we just – that's what I want to hear from you. They're trying to ship guys out as soon as possible.
They need a few more quality losses, I would say.
Yes.
And here's the funny thing. Like, we've got a lottery tracker, and I'm sure you guys are watching it closely on our website that we're updating every morning. And, like, I'm like, holy smokes. The Hawks weren't even close to another team like 10 days ago. And now all of a sudden, you know, you watch some of these other teams. Arizona had lost 9 in a row. And Columbus, like, what the heck's going on there? They're, like, all of a sudden, those teams are ahead of the Blackhawks in the lottery sweepstakes. But here's the other part of it, that if you actually are following the lottery odds, it was reminded to me again yesterday, even if you finish 32nd, you still have a 74% chance of not getting Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
So it's a crapshoot. It's like quite literally a lottery, and it puts teams in a spot where it's like you can do all you can to get to the bottom, but you're still way more than likely than not to not get the guy.
Yeah, the only thing of being the 32nd team is that you can't drop lower than third, and then you're out of the Fantilli, Bedard, Carlson sweepstakes.
Well, Pat, here's what I would say to that. I talked to Craig Button, former NHL GM and scout, 25, 30 years in the NHL, now works at TSN, on my podcast today. And we were talking today, yes, Fantilli and Carlson special players, but what about someone like Matvei Michkov from Russia? A really talented guy that no one has actual eyes on that works for an NHL team because no NHL scouts right now are living in Russia. There's friends that they trust and scouting services that they employ, but no one actually working for an NHL team has eyes on the ground in Russia to see this player play. Obviously wasn't part of the World Juniors. The geopolitical sphere has changed. He's under contract for the next 3 years until 2026 is the first time that he'd be eligible to come over. Who knows what the world looks like by then? Is a general manager willing? He's probably a top three talent, but is a general manager willing to roll the dice and select a player that may not even be running the organization when he comes over? Is that a risk a team like the Blackhawks, who are thinking way longer term? Let's say they do fall out of the top three. Given that they're thinking so far down the line, would they be willing to take a chance like that?
I can answer that for you. They won't.
Really interesting.
They won't do it. I think Montreal should be the team that roll the dice because they got two. They're
Why?
Probably going to have two top 10 picks. That feels like the place for Matvei. But, yeah, I've been told that the Hawks are not going to look at Michkov.
Why is that?
They don't want to wait that long.
Really? I think everything the Hawks are doing is like 5 to 6 to 7 years down the line.
They're playing the long game, no question.
Yeah.
And I think the only way they're playing a shorter game is if they get Connor Bedard.
Well, that makes sense. But, like, what happens if, just to play devil's advocate, and I don't profess to be a draft expert at all, what if Matvei Michkov is the next Kirill Kaprizov or the next Nikita Kucherov? Does that change your opinion or thought process?
Yeah, but you went through all the hurdles of not being able to scout him and that he's going to be there for three. You know, like, there's a lot of ifs in that.
Kaprizov had the same contract issue, and that he couldn't come over forever, which is a big reason why he fell to the fifth round. And Kucherov, he also needed someone to pay off his Russian team in order to be able to get out of his deal, which is why he went in the third round. Like, this happens all the time with Russian players, and that's with guys that they have eyes on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
This guy, everyone's saying, has potential to be a franchise changer. That's a surefire top five talent in one of the best drafts that we've had in years.
Yeah, I do like the idea of Kyle Davidson just pulling up highlights on YouTube like the rest of us. Like, that's the extent of his scouting. But yeah, I think I know they have a long term vision, but I do think they have the reality of the fan base looking at it like it's already been 8 years of not winning a playoff series, and it's like, how much longer do you want people to wait? I think they're ready to start being competitive. And I don't think they want to wait for, you know, another, I don't know.
I think the second you go down that path and you concern yourself with fans getting impatient is the second you get yourself into trouble when you're orchestrating a rebuild and a retool where you're tearing it down basically to the stud in serious trouble.
Frank Saravalli, you do great work for the Daily Faceoff. Thanks for the time today, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
We're back to wrap up the hockey show after this.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
Show. The Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle, sponsored by the Chicago Wolves. They are back in action tonight. Their road trip continues in Rockford. Then they're on to Tucson. Not a bad place to be this time of year. Next Saturday, the 28th, it's Rivalry Week, Wolves and Rockford Ice Hogs. It's also Superhero Night. Special Superhero Night ticket packages are available at ChicagoWolves.com. Thanks to our producer, Charlie Bevins, and Frank Ciravalli, who joined us. Okay, we've got... I don't know, month and change until the March 3rd trade deadline. Don't put your coaching hat on, Chief. Put on your tankathon tank top.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think maybe he started to do it a little bit, Richardson. We've seen Seth Jones's minutes the last two nights are down to like the 22-minute range, so he's limiting his ice time a little bit. Maybe try Patrick Kane at center. Just try, like, whatever you can do. Like, it has to be weird. You can't. You got to find levers to pull without blowing up the whole thing. Like, you don't want to have Kurashev and these guys regress, but they're playing too well.
Caleb Jones looked good in net when making that save Philly.
Yeah.
Try him.
They haven't won a game in Philly since 1996.
What were you doing in 1996?
I was probably wearing a Jofa bucket because I love Peter Forsberg, and I was peewee hockey. 10 years old was the last time. So that was still Ronick Amonte. Chelios' time was the last time they won in Philly. So to pick that spot was tough. But, yeah, it's time to start losing again, boys.
All right, that's it for the Hockey Show. Up next, it's White Sox Weekly. Hawks in St. Louis tonight. We'll see you for the pregame show at 6:30.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.